You may have heard that astronauts Suni Williams and Butch Wilmore are stranded aboard the International Space Station due to technical issues with their Boeing Starliner spacecraft. A collaboration between NASA and SpaceX has them slated to return in February aboard a SpaceX Dragon rocket, but we're here to answer your burning question. Could they have used the same Houston rockets that have amassed several notable wins over the past few weeks? Plus, we thought you might want to know that 8 kilometers is approximately equivalent to 314,961 inches. That information may come in handy later on this week's episode of Against the Grain, but not until we roll the music and then we can talk some ball.
This is K-True on 96.1 KTRU LP Houston and streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org. Back to you, Ian.
Good morning, Houston. I'm Ian Kleppinger, and welcome back to Against the Grain on KTRU 96.1 FM, the Rice University student-run radio show, where we break down everything going on in the world of Rice athletics and across the broader sports scene from the city of Houston. You can listen to us every Thursday at 10 a.m. right here on KTRU 96.1 FM and stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for KTRU Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Amazon Music. To stay in the loop, go ahead and follow us at ktru.sports on Instagram and at ktrusports on TikTok. We've always got exciting stuff in the works, and we don't want you to miss out. If you have a question for our team of hosts, feel free to DM us on either of those platforms or drop a note to ktrusports@gmail.com. That's ktrusports@gmail.com, all lowercase there in the first part of that email address. We want to know what you want to know so we can answer it on the air. Throughout the next hour, you will be hearing from a whole team of student hosts. I'll be getting us started with our first segment, Around the Hedges. Here at Rice University, we say that our campus is more or less within the hedges, and more commonly that the greater city of Houston is beyond said hedges. To start off each episode of Against the Grain, we go around the hedges for a quick review of the biggest sports moments from the past week from both our Rice campus and the city of Houston. We're going to kick it off with some hoops. Rice women's basketball had a tough loss in their first game, but they rebounded well, pun intended. They took down North Carolina A&T's Aggies by 1 point, 61-60 last Friday. Bit of a dramatic game there. Susie Ngulofak led the way for the Owls with 19 points, 10 rebounds, a double-double, and threw three blocks on top of that as a rim protector down low. And they followed that up on Monday, taking on the South Alabama Jaguars by a score of 96-58. The Owls showcased their depth that we have previously discussed here on Against the Grain in that game. They had five players in double digits, and three of them came off the bench. Haley Adams and Dominic Ennis started in on the floor and each dropped 10. And then Shelby Hayes, Victoria Flores, and Emily Klozek came off the bench at some point in the game and ended up with double-digit points. They had 11, 12, and 12 respectively. Your Owls are back at it again tonight against the crosstown rival Houston Cougars. We may or may not be predicting that game towards the back end of our show, so make sure to stay tuned. You don't want to miss out on that. Continuing with our theme on the hardwood, we've got the Rice men's basketball team who dropped their first game of the season, 73-65 to Florida State in the Mattress Firm Battleground 2024, which was played at the Toyota Center here in Houston. That's the home of the Houston Rockets, for those of you who may not be familiar. Right after that, there was a great national powerhouse game, actually. The number 4 Houston Cougars lost to the nationally ranked number 11 Auburn Tigers by just 5 points. The Rice game was a well-rounded effort for the Owls. They had 10 different players score, and they followed that up on Tuesday night, beating the University of Louisiana Monroe's Warhawks 66-50. It was another well-rounded effort from them there. Alim Husenovic led the way with 15 points and 2 steals, and both Trays were getting their work in. Broadnax had 14 points, 7 assists. Patterson came off the bench in just 19 minutes and almost got a double-double with 8 points, 9 boards, and 3 steals, making himself known on the perimeter. The Owls are now 2-1. They are back in action this Saturday at home against the Demons of Northwestern State. Great mascot shout there. Rice women's soccer unfortunately wrapped up their season in their American Athletic Conference semifinal. They were up against nationally ranked number 19 and top seed in the conference, the Memphis Tigers. They dropped that game by a score of 3-1. 1, which unfortunately dwindles any NCAA tournament hopes they may have had. Rice's lone goal came off the head of Natalie Gorgi in the 57th minute, which was from a corner kick by Katarina Albuquerque. That tied the game at 1-1 in said 57th minute, but in case you could not infer from the score, Memphis went on to score two more times before the end of regulation, and the Owls will finish their season 12-6-2, 5-4-1 in the conference. Don't be too down, though, because last year they were 3-13-2, so great improvement there, and we are excited to see what the Owl women can do on the pitch come next fall. Rice football continued their roller coaster of a season against the Memphis Tigers. They lost by one score, 27-20. Close game against one of the toughest conference opponents for them. They need to win both of their remaining games to have a shot at bowl eligibility. They'll need to get in that 5-win criteria now, depending on how the records shake out, along with GPA and other NCAA rules. Rice generally does pretty well in that GPA category. We've gotten into several bowl games in the five-win slot over the last couple years, if you do recall. So not completely hopeless yet. We are off this weekend, and the Owls have a game against 2-7 UAB on November 23rd. That's when they're back in action. So keep following your Owls football team. They may have a shot to make a bowl game if they play well here out under their new interim head coach, Alomar. Since we last mentioned Rice Volleyball, you may remember in the first episode we gave a quick rundown of what they were up to, and we were noted that they were starting to get hot. Since that mention, they swept Charlotte, swept UTSA on the road, beat Wichita State 3-2, and then swept UAB. So they are now on a 6-game win streak. They're 12-2 in the conference. They're 17-6 overall, so great win-loss stats there. They are tied with South Florida for the top spot in the AAC, and they will wrap up their homestand against Memphis on Friday night. AAC is kind of becoming a sneaky stacked volleyball conference. There are several teams at the top there with outrageous win-loss records, Rice, of course, among them. Kicking it back to women's tennis, we also talked about this a couple episodes ago. Sophomore standout Divna Ratkovic won the American Athletic Conference women's singles tournament, you may recall, and she just recently competed in the tournament she qualified for with that win, which was the ITA Conference Masters in Rome, Georgia. She won both of her matches that she played last Thursday when our previous episode aired. She defeated Maya Ushio from the University of Illinois Chicago 7-5 and then 6-0 in the second set, and then she beat Marina Skegro from Charleston Southern by a scores of 6-3 and 6-4. The following day, she dropped what I believe was a quarterfinal matchup to Quadre from Florida International University by the score of 6-3, 6-1. That wraps up her fall season, but back in our hometown of Houston at the George R. Brown Tennis Center, the Rice Invitational, three Owls had great standout performances for the women. Two of them swept their flights, which I believe is like a group in round robin play in tennis. Daria Schwartzman won her final match 6-0, 6-1 to conclude that, so resounding victory from her over a player from A&M, so a big program win there for Rice. And Nithessa Selvaraj defeated a UTSA tennis player in a very long match that went three sets, two of which went to 6-4 to wrap up her sweep of her flight. And after dropping her first game, Anushka Ashar also deserves some credit. She won her consolation bracket with her final match against Valentina Ivanovskaya from UT Arlington 6-3, 6-2. That wraps up the fall season for women's tennis. They will be back in action in the spring. I honestly don't know what tennis season looks like, but they will definitely be back in action according to the Rice Athletics website, so stay tuned on Against the Grain. We'll keep you posted on Rice Tennis as we learn more. One other Rice sport that we're going to take a little bit of a deeper dive into this episode is our men's and women's cross-country teams. I'm joined here by Garrett Lowe and our executive producer, Chloe Singer, making her segment debut a little bit on the pod with us to talk cross-country. Welcome, folks. Let's get started.
Sounds good, Ian.
So we haven't really talked about cross country much before on our show. Both the men's and the women's team generally compete at the same time at meets. They competed in the American Athletic Conference Championships 2 weeks ago on Friday, November 1st, or approximately 2 weeks ago in Wichita, Kansas. I'm guessing Wichita State was the host school for that. And we had a little bit of a difference in performance from our two teams. Let's start off with the men. The men struggled a little bit. They had a few key injuries that they were trying to rebound from. You will hear a little later in an exclusive interview that we've got for you on our show that there were a lot of things that just didn't quite go the way that Rice wanted to. Either of you have anything you might want to say kind of about the men's performance? Let the people know what might have happened there, what things went down in Wichita that day.
Yeah, just not the outcome that we were looking for, obviously. We have a bunch of good runners, I think 9 or so guys that can run under 25 minutes. And just didn't happen for us.
Chloe was alluding to that 25 to fill in our viewers at home. She's talking about a 25-minute time in the 8K, which is about 4.97 miles. So that's almost a 5-flat pace that all 9 of those runners have run under at one point or another in competition. So insane athleticism there. Just to put that into perspective for you, Rice finished 8th in the AAC in this, or 8th in this championship meet, I guess, with 215 points. Tulane and Tulsa led the way. They tend to be cross-country powerhouses, as we will see a little bit later in the conference. Though we did have some respectable performance. We had 3 runners score in the top 50 in the conference, and we had a few more below that who were able to score points for Rice's team. Really want to highlight Ben Tijerina, who we'll talk about a little bit later. He had that 25-minute, 2-second time, so posting right on that 5-flat mile in what was otherwise a little bit of a tough meet for the Owl men. But you guys are both known for being a little more optimistic than me, so why not one of you let the folks know, you know, about some success that the women maybe had in their side of the conference tournament.
Yeah, no, the women had a much more productive AAC tournament. They were able to finish 3rd in the conference, putting up a score of 72, and really have shown a lot of improvement this year on the team. And, you know, the head coach kind of spoke to that effect, Jim Bevan, saying what a difference a year makes. We were 162 points last year in 6th place, and this year we were 72 points in 3rd place. So clearly the group is showing great signs of improvement, as we see, you know, some of the top runners are now have had more time to mature here at Rice.
Yeah, one thing later in that interview that Coach Bevan gave, he talks about kind of the structure of the powerhouse teams on the women's cross country side of the American Athletic Conference. And there's kind of 4 big dogs. You got Tulsa and Tulane again, and you got Rice and Charlotte. And Rice hung in there coming in 3rd. With Charlotte a little bit of a drop-off after that, then North Texas and Wichita State with a much bigger drop-off there on the women's side after those top 4. So Rice is really hanging right in there, just edged out by a few points by the top dogs in the AAC. Excellent contention there just overall. And we've got a few absolute studs with great finishes that posted to help get that low score for Rice in the 6K, which is a 3.73-mile race. Garrett, why don't you run us through some of those times for the folks at home?
Yeah, taking 3rd place was Olivia Kepik at 20:55. Then you have Alex Gobrin at 21:26. Daphne Mayer, 21:31, 15th place. Heidi Nielsen, 21:38, 17th place. Very strong finishes.
Great finishes there, yeah.
I would guess there were, at least 100 runners in this meet. We had 4 girls in the top 20. That's an awesome race for us. And if you're just looking at the overall standings, too, yeah, we got 3rd. We were 9 points outside of 1st. So
right.
One runner has, you know, a really good day, maybe sets a PR, and we win this meet. I think
take that much, depending on how tight the pack is. I don't know a ton about how cross-country scoring works, but I would imagine that seems like the way the standings like stack out, that seems like a very, very, very thin margin. I will also say that there were a little bit over 100 runners in the race. Garrett's hypothesis is correct. And all of the Rice women who finished that race finished in the top half, with the final Rice finisher coming in at 46th place with a very respectable 22:43 time from Brooklyn Crow. So absolutely great stuff there from the Rice women. Up next for both teams, which is partially our purpose for this segment, is on November 15th. They will be taking on the NCAA South Central Regional Field. That will be held on the same course as the Arturo Barrios Invite out near Texas A&M in the Bryan College Station area. Rice has had kind of a mix of success and shortcomings at NCAA championships. Let's focus on last year a little bit and see if we can, you know, figure out for the viewers what they might be able to expect from our Owls at this year's NCAA Regionals.
Yeah, I think on the men's side, one person to watch out for is Gus Gannon, who posted a great finish last year. He finished 25th out of 172 runners, and he looks poised to make another good push this year.
Yeah, no doubt. Gus is that guy. We all know that. Gus the bus. One thing to note on that, another reason maybe you saw the men have a lower finish in that AAC meet on Friday, November 1st. Gus did not finish that race. Hopefully he's okay if it was an injury or any sort of situation, but when your fastest guys go down and get a DNF, it's really hard to, you know, stay up there in the pack. And so I think that's just another reason to be even more optimistic about this men's team, which we're going to hear more about from Will McDermott shortly.
Yeah, I think the men's team, like, we do hear for this from Will a little bit later, but also the coach alluded to in that when we were quoting that earlier, that they just had a lot of injury trouble. So I think if really running healthily at their full potential on what's a really fast course up there at A&M, where a lot of these guys have run well before, I think the men are definitely poised to get close to replicating their last year regional performance, where they placed 7th out of 25 teams in that NCAA meet, as opposed to maybe what they kind of did this past time at the conference championships. We have a special guest for you from the cross country team coming up. A couple of us had the opportunity to sit down with men's cross country team member Will McDermott. So without further ado, let's get into that interview. Hello, hello, everyone. We are back with another exclusive interview right here on Against the Grain on KTRU 96.1 FM. I'm here with Brandon Brockia, and we are joined by Will McDermott, who is a junior on the Rice University men's cross-country team. He is a native of the Woodlands, Texas, at a John Cooper High School, and he has a few notable honors, including some great finishes at recent meets that we alluded to in our previous segment, as well as a great set of academic honors and accolades, including being on the all-academic team in the American Athletic Conference in the 23-24 school year, and several academic and commissioner's medals from Rice's time in Conference USA. Will, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
So to get us started, I mentioned that, you know, you're from the Woodlands, which is obviously in the Houston area. I think most of our listeners are also from the Houston area and probably know that. So was going to Rice or staying in Houston always like a goal or an objective of yours? Was that always something you wanted to do? And kind of what went into that decision process coming out of high school to go to Rice?
Yeah, honestly, you know, coming out of high school, I really had no idea where I wanted to go. I actually did tour a bunch of colleges like up in the Northeast and on the West Coast as well, California and such. And I kind of wasn't thinking about staying in Texas, but my high school coach actually knows John pretty well, who's the Rice coach, and he recommended that I get in touch with him, see what he thinks, if I can be on the team. And so reached out to John, greatest guy ever, greatest coach ever, super sweet, super nice. And immediately that first email, that first back and forth we had, I knew I wanted to go to Rice. But my times in high school weren't the greatest, honestly. So John kind of said to me, you know, if you get into Rice academically, you can come on the team as a walk-on. And I'm like, okay, so I have to decide between maybe like a few schools on the West Coast or the East Coast, some D3 schools that are going to allow me onto their team, or I could go to this great D1 school right here in Texas. I'll be pretty close to home as a walk-on, but I'll know John pretty well, who's super nice, and that's what I ended up doing.
Nice. So with that, though, like, you're obviously very humble because you said, like, your times weren't that great in high school, but you were a part of a 4x800 relay team that broke your school's record. What was it like being on a group like that?
Oh, my gosh. That team was so fun to be a part of. It was me, Vishnu, Carson, and Drew. Like, all of us were super close in high school. And honestly, I was probably the biggest fish out of water in that regard, because those three other guys were super strong 800 runners, and I was the only guy who was just really focused on the mile, the 2 mile, definitely more of a distance guy back in high school. But my high school coach just said, hey, why don't we throw you into this 4x800, see how you do? And it ended up going really well. I believe that 4x800 record was broken at St. John's, which is, I think, just pretty close to here. And actually, the team who, the 4x8 relay squad who run that race, who ran that race and won, was the St. John's team, and their 4x8 team was very elite. And actually, one of the guys on that team, William Timms, runs at Rice right now, which is it's a pretty small world in that regard. But yeah, honestly, they just helped us carry us through the finish line, helped us break our own school record. So it's great to have that experience.
That's awesome to hear. when you were coming out of high school and you had done, you know, all those track events, obviously in the track world, you know, the 800, the 1 mile, the 2 mile, are those distance events. But compared to like what you're doing at the NCAA, you know, level cross country, that's not nearly as far. Were there any challenges kind of in that transition, or what was that transition like for you more exclusively focusing on cross country running coming into Rice?
Yeah, it was definitely very daunting with cross country. In high school, it's very much 5K focus. That's essentially what all the distance for all our races in high school. And then coming into college, it's like all 8Ks. And then at the end of our season, at 10K for regionals. So it's like, geez, three more K. Like, how am I going to handle this first race going in? And I believe my first 8K my freshman year was at A&M. And coming through 5K, I'm like, oh my God, I still have 3K left to go. So, I was extremely tired, and I just kind of had to push myself through that last 3K. And I was a little slow, but I think as the years have gone on, I know how to run those longer distances better, much better than I did at the beginning of my freshman year.
In our research, we found that maybe it was like a 4 mile race in your first freshman year, and then it moved to an 8K?
What was that 4 mile race? Was it Rice Invite?
I honestly don't remember.
Rice Invite, Lake Charles Toyota are the... Oh, that one's high school. And then there was a college one, like September 2022.
Yeah, I think that first 4 mile Rice always hosts, but it's always a weird distance. Like my freshman year, it was 4 miles, and then I think the year after it was 5.5K and then 5.2K. It's never consistent. But yeah.
Well, yeah. So you've in those 8Ks that have kind of, that's, you know, what NCAA cross country largely consists of. That's what you said. You ran a career best 24:45. At the Arturo Barrios Invite in October of 2023. And then this year at that same meet, you ran a 24:55. So you've obviously found a way to kind of establish consistency at that distance, since I'm guessing you're training for a lot of time. But how hard is it to really be that consistent across, you know, meets from year to year with all the fluctuations that happen in life and training?
Yeah, you know, it's so difficult. Both, I don't think I know a single cross-country runner just in my life over high school and in college who hasn't gotten at least somewhat injured at some point. And so my sophomore year, I had pretty bad Achilles tendonitis. And I think if you go through like my results for that time, like all my times were really slow. But then coming out of that, recovering from that junior year at Arturo Barrios that year, I was really strong. I did my rehab, did my work outside of practice. And I ended up running really well. And honestly, that course in general, A&M's course, it runs really fast. I always tend to have great races there. I think that race this year and both last year are my only times that are sub 25. So hopefully going into regionals, it's being hosted at the same course. Hopefully I can get a pretty good time there.
How hard is it to shave off like a few seconds off a time, like in terms of like training, or also like how much does that fluctuate from course to course? What does that look like for you guys?
Oh yeah, it's way more difficult than say running the mile in track, where you're maybe getting a millisecond off. Like times fluctuate so much. I've had races that are in the 26 minutes and the 27 minutes, and I felt like I was running my hardest. And then there's races where I'm like in the low 25s, 24s, and I feel like I'm maybe not working as hard as I did in the 27-minute races. But yeah, definitely depends on the course. Some courses can be very hilly. Weather conditions can be a big problem as well. I know for some of my slower times, like rain and like muddiness can definitely affect the course the day before. You're running a little bit slower. And honestly, like a lot of the faster courses have come down to cooler weather, just flatter courses, not a lot of hills. So yeah, to answer your question, there is a lot of fluctuation there.
Kind of adding to that like point on the fluctuation of like times on different courses and stuff, How do you go about like pacing yourself for a race that is like over 20 minutes long, right? Like it's not a sprint. Like how do you keep that consistent like from race to race?
Yeah. It's definitely not easy. I think most runners definitely suffer a little bit mentally. Just like being in the middle of the race, like, oh my God, like I have this much distance left. Like how can I just continue on? How do I not drop out? And honestly, for me, I think breaking the race up mentally just into smaller sections, like, okay, first mile, I'm going to stay with this pack. I'm going to have a 450 mile, and just getting through that, just one mile at a time for me helps a lot. And then just visualizing the finish too, that mentally definitely helps as well.
Yeah, fans, if you didn't catch that, he just casually dropped running a 450 mile to start off the race. So that's pretty cool. I cannot do that. I know you're all shocked at home. A couple of fun questions we wanted to run by you. They're a little bit music related. So do you have like a favorite artist and just in general, and or what music do you listen to like when you're running and training?
Oh, in general, I'm definitely a fan of oldies. I like a lot of Beatles, lots of Pink Floyd. Just any of that classic rock stuff. And then while I'm running, definitely something to just keep the legs moving. So I generally tend to listen to a lot of house music, a lot of dance music, Daft Punk, that type of stuff.
Sounds fun. Do you have any advice you would maybe give to a novice runner or someone who's just getting started running as someone who's become relatively accomplished in the field, I think many would say?
Yeah. Definitely, if you're just starting out, I think a lot of people who I know who are just starting out tend to hate running from the beginning. But I would say just find a group who's as committed as you. I promise you it's going to get easier if you stick with it. And, like, don't start out doing, you know, 5-mile runs, 6-mile runs, like anything over your limit. Just start easy. Half mile, 1 mile runs, once a day or every other day, would be fine. And then just building up from there, you're slowly going to get faster. And I think you're slowly going to appreciate the sport more.
Nice. So with that, we're going to ask you one last question to wrap it up. And we're just going to ask you about what your approach is, for you and your teammates heading into the NCAA regionals. That's coming up.
Yeah. So you guys might know, we just had conference 2 weeks ago and we didn't really have an ideal result. A lot of us ran really hard, but a few guys didn't run as well as we thought they would run, myself included. So that was definitely not really great for morale, but knowing what we know based on our Arturo Barrios meet from 4 weeks ago, we had, I believe, 9 guys who were all sub 25 in the 8K, which is really, really good. We have a really strong foundation. We know all of our guys can run well, and we've ran this course before. So I think the key is just going into this 10K. It's just going to be 2K long, 2 kilometers longer. We know that we can all run really well. So I think the key is just to execute, stay in our own packs, run with each other, and I think we're going to have a good result.
We sure hope so. All of us here on campus will be rooting for you guys out in the College Station area. Unfortunately, that is about all the time we have for our interview with you today, Will. But before we let you go, anything you want to plug, where can the people find you?
Well, my Instagram is WPM_29. I would really appreciate if you guys would all follow Rice Men's TFXE, I think, on Instagram, and the women's page as well. We don't post on there a lot, but it'll just help you keep you guys updated on when our meets are going to be, our results and whatnot. But yeah.
Love to hear it. Listeners at home, go ahead and make sure to get that done so you can say posted on everything going on in the Rice men's and women's cross country and track and field spheres. Will, thank you once again so much for joining us, and we'll get right back into our regularly scheduled programming.
Well, thank you, guys.
Before we get into our game for today, we have a quick promotion for our other Rice shows here on KTRU. KTRU's Rice Radio Reggae takes listeners on a tour of some of the many facets of reggae music, from the roots reggae made famous by Bob Marley to instrumental dub, dance hop, and more. A word to describe KTRU is eclectic, and Rice Radio Reggae follows suit, with songs in each set moving from one style to another, and often one country to another. Every Wednesday from 5 to 7 p.m., KTRU's Rice Radio Reggae. Give a manatee gift adoption from Save the Mandy Club. 34 real Mandys are up for adoption in their Adopt a Manatee program. Funds help with education and conservation efforts. Each person who adopts receives a full-color photo, biography, adoption certificate, and more. Call toll-free at 1-800-432-JOIN-5646 or visit SaveTheManatee.org.
Welcome back, all you iPad kids. It's time for some more brain rot. Today, we are going to be doing a draft as we look to build the best NBA franchise with young players exclusively under the age of 25. And before you spam the comments saying, "Oh, you forgot Luka, you forgot Ja, you forgot Jaren Jackson Jr.," shut up. Let it be known that this draft does not include players who are currently 25 years old. Andrew, David, and Brandon are going to be our contestants today. Then I, with my very mediocre basketball mind, will rank their teams and pick who has assembled the best squad for the future. With that said, I'm going to kick it over to Andrew Fox to make the first selection in the draft.
Easy first selection, I'm not going to lie. It's Wimby all day, every day. Okay.
Now we go to David.
Well, the next easy pick is Anthony Edwards.
Over to Brandon, who gets two picks.
I'm going to take Tyrese Halliburton. Yeah. And then I'm going to take...
Reach of the draft already.
Tyrese Maxey.
Okay.
All right.
You're finished.
I'm going to rate Brandon's team last. I'm going to give a little spoiler alert. Back over to David, who has an absolute layup.
I'm taking LaMelo Ball.
Oh, my God. I win.
I thought it was going to be.
Okay. So seeing as I've now won the draft, I can pretty much do whatever I want. So I'm going to take Chet as my four and Paolo, the closest player we've seen to LeBron, at the three.
Andrew Fox is assembling a god squad of absolute 7-foot demons. Y'all are about to get ran through.
They don't understand small ball.
You don't understand small ball. You don't understand small ball. Over to David to help fight off Andrew's god squad.
I'm taking Evan Mobley.
Good pick.
Solid pick.
Yeah.
Brandon.
I guess
all the centers are gone. Who's it going to be?
I'm going to take... Sengun, you know, get a little.
Oh, good lord!
Little baby Sengun.
Your team is G League level, bro.
All right, you got another pick.
And then I'm going to take Darius Garland.
Darius, huh? Wow, this team is tiny. This team, oh Darius Garland, is going to be playing the three or Tyrese Maxey.
Okay, dude.
You have no defense. Your team sucks. All right, David,
we're
going to
score a lot. We're going to score a lot.
You know what? I'm taking Zion.
Solid pick. Andrew, two picks to you now, my good friend.
I need some guards, and I kind of want some shooting. So I'm going to go Cade Cunningham, and we'll just play some big ball Jalen Williams as my shooting guard.
Oh, my God, dude. Your team's got me salivating. All right, David, to you.
For my four, you know, I'm going to take Brandon Miller.
Brandon Miller. I love that sleeper pick. Remember, this draft is for the future, not just this year. That is a great young player. Now, Brandon, last pick in the draft. Who's it's going to be?
I'm going to take Scotty Barnes.
All right. A good pick to help save your poverty franchise. just to give you guys a little summary, Team Andrew Fox, he has Cade Cunningham at point guard, Jalen Williams at shooting guard, Paulo Banchero at small forward, Chet Holmgren at the four, and Wemby at the five. Yeah, that's the best team by far. This team has amazing creation from Cade and J-Dub. You have absolute demons on the defensive end. Paulo, Chet, Wemby is an insane back line. Jalen and Cade is a great backcourt defense. I mean, this team's nasty. I'm trying not to glaze too hard, but you cooked on that, Andrew. Second best team, it's not you, Brandon. It's very clearly David. He has point guard LaMelo Ball, shooting guard Anthony Edwards, small forward Zion, power forward Brandon Miller, center Evan Mobley. This offensive unit would be absolutely ridiculous. LaMelo Ball is an awesome passer. I think he makes up for the very few weaknesses and holes that you could say are in Anthony Edwards' offensive game right now. It's still going to be a really good defensive backcourt, too. People forget LaMelo Ball is like 6'7", 6'8". Anthony Edwards is a great defender. Zion, a little bit mid defensively. Brandon Miller, a bit mid defensively. And then you have Mobley, who's a defensive player of the year candidate every year. This is a great team. I think you took the best players available, largely. You took what came to you. And then we go to the person who did not do those things. Brandon Brachia.
I just don't think like there's fair respect being put on Tyrese Maxey.
Okay. Like, here's my response to that. Real.
Like, I think you should have just cut that quote at I don't
year.
Think.
Yeah.
Tyrese Maxey was phenomenal, like, in the playoffs last year. Phenomenal.
Bro, you got Darius Garland at the three,
yeah,
bro.
That's
Paolo's going to sit on you.
Over. That's cool. Tyrese Maxey was phenomenal as a number two option. But I want to just think about, I'll read you guys Brandon's full lineup. Point guard Tyrese Haliburton, shooting guard Tyrese Maxey, small forward Darius Garland, power forward Scottie Barnes, center Şengün. This is a very undersized team. This is a team that is going to get victimized defensively by the other two squads. You're relying on Haliburton and Şengün to create a lot of offense. I just don't really see the fit here exactly. I don't know what you're going for. I think you just need to hop off Tyrese Maxey and accept that this is the worst team by far. All right. That concludes TikTok brain rot for the day. Now that we've wrapped up our discussion of a little bit of young talent, let's transition into the hometown NBA team, a team chock full of young talent, your Houston Rockets.
All right, for this next segment, thank you, Garrett, by the way, we've got a couple of us here to talk Rockets basketball. We will have myself sort of serving as the MC and facilitator of this amazing debate. We've got Garrett, David, and Andrew as well to talk about the young core that we have here in Houston, a wealth of talent to pick from. And we're going to talk about, you know, just this team going forward, what's their ceiling? How do we develop these young stars? And let's be honest, there's a lot of talent on this team. And what do we do with that? Could we play GM and maybe move or make a move for a certain star player in the NBA? So let's talk about the ceiling for this team because they've gone off to a very strong start in the season. So, Garrett, why don't you take it away? What do you want to talk to us about when it comes to this ceiling? And the two of you, feel free to chime in whenever Garrett gives the inevitable bad take. Yeah.
I'll be honest, I'm not a Rockets fan. I am not overly bullish on this team. I know they're 7-4 right now. They played relatively well to start the season. You got a good win against the Mavs, good win against the Grizzlies. I don't think this is a playoff team. I think this is a team that's going to be fighting to get into the play-in. They're probably going to be like the 9th or 10th seed. I don't really see the path for the Rockets making the playoffs. And even if they do make the playoffs, I don't see a path for them to really make any noise or have a chance to put one of the West contenders on upset watch.
Not even play-in, Garrett?
I think they could make it out of the play-in, yes, against some other poverty Western Conference teams. But I don't see them doing anything beyond that.
Yeah, I mean, just to add on to that, looking at all of the other teams in the West, there really isn't a lot of good teams where you can say Jalen Green is better than their best player. Like,
oh, no.
There's none.
But Jalen Green is not the Rockets' best player, we could say, right? We could say that's Şengün.
Well, whether it be Şengün or Jalen Green, if you're looking at like a number one option ranking in the West, right, Jalen Green or Şengün are probably, what, 13th or 14th on that list. They're better than Who's the Trailblazers' best player at this point? Anthony Simons? Is it maybe Scoot? Outside of that, I would take Zion over either of them. I'd take Markkanen either over them. You obviously take Wemby. You take Kawhi. You take De'Aaron Fox. I mean, this team isn't going to look to dominate with its two stars. The story of the Rockets is really their depth and everything that they can throw at you. And when, you know, it gets late into the season, a lot of teams are dealing with injuries. I think that's where the Rockets could make a little bit of a push to get to the play-in, to maybe get to, like, the 8 seed, possibly. But they're just not, like, top-heavy at all.
But might I sort of throw something out there? Don't you think with the amount of games being played, obviously we have characters like Joel Embiid making a, you know, an absolute joke of load management. But with players sort of taking on more injuries, don't you think that having a lot of depth like the Rockets do could help out in a situation like that? Don't you think?
I don't think their depth is like playoff depth, though, because you got to think, like, in the playoffs, a lot of these teams shorten their rotations to like 8-9 players, like, especially like the Knicks. Look at what they did last year. They were playing like 6 or 7 players in a game. And the Rockets, like, their team is deep, but it's deep like on kind of the bummy end of the team. Like,
okay.
Jock Landale is not getting playoff minutes, if we're being totally serious. This team's ceiling is like 2 playoff wins in a series if they're lucky.
I 100% agree with that. I don't like the shredded Jock Landale, real quick.
My fault.
Stop disrespecting my man.
No,
and also,
man.
Steven Adams is their second best center. I would say their depth, like, if you, let's say you take off Jalen Green and Şengün and put in, like, a Jokic and Murray, let's say, you would look at this team's depth as being unbelievable. Like, they do have, like, the same amount of depth as, like, their 7th or 8th best player is probably better than, like, it's definitely better than the Nuggets' 7th or 8th best player. It's probably, like, equal to the Thunder's 7th or 8th best player. But it really is just, like, the top-end talent. Like,
sure.
The depth wins you regular season games, stars win you postseason games, I think is what it comes down to some degree.
Or Jamal Murray deciding to play in the fourth quarter after disappearing for 3 quarters entirely. But, you know, that's
okay,
besides
Lakers
the point.
Fan.
All right, no, let's clarify. I, Julian, am not a Lakers fan. I am a Rockets fan.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I'll just give a quick shout-out to my roommate, TJ. He's the one that got me on the Lakers bandwagon, but barely a bandwagon at that. So I guess we can sort of shift the conversation a little bit more to, I guess we've spoken about how there is a lot of depth on this team. Let's be a little bit optimistic here. So let's say that the team were to make the play-in. Who is the player that y'all think could make the biggest difference in a playoff series? Who's that X-factor player? Because we do have veteran players who have played in playoff series recently. Fred VanVleet, you know, best player in the league. Dylan Brooks, of course. We have veterans who have played in these playoff series, and I don't know, maybe they step up while the younger talent, plays up to, their talent. So what do we think here? Is there a possibility at all that anybody could make a difference?
Honestly, as an X factor, I would pick a guy like Reed Shepard. His shooting across the season, we've only seen pretty limited minutes, but looking at his college days, he shot 52% from 3 with 4 attempts a game. This guy is a very promising young guard, and if he gets on more minutes during the season to be able to feel comfortable in his role, I think we can very easily see him just blow up during a play-in game, potentially being able to swing a game in the favor for the Rockets.
Yeah, the fans love him, by the way. Garrett and I were at the Rockets-Wizards game earlier this week, and anytime Reed got the ball, it's like you have the young fans, older fans, like all of them just want that guy to succeed. So, fun guy to watch. Garrett, Andrew, any objections to that? Any different?
I think that's a great take by David. I'm a big Reed Shepard guy, too. I'm a big proponent of moving on from someone like Dylan Brooks or Fred VanVleet, which we'll talk about a little bit later to open up minutes for Reed Shepard. So I do think if this Rockets team is to, you know, steal a game in the play-in, it's going to be because one of those younger guys like Shepard, maybe Jabari Smith, has just an outburst in the playoffs where they go for 30 points. They hit 5 or 6 threes.
Bari going for 30 points?
It's happened before.
If there's one player on this team where if they became good, it would change the team the most, it's Jabari Smith.
Because,
if we're being serious, like, Auburn, he had the potential. He's super athletic. He can score. Like, it's somewhere in his bag. He just needs to find it. It's been a rough year for him, but he proved last year, like, his efficiency was a little bit better. It's possible he has a future as, like, a decent maybe 4th, 3rd option on a team. I think if he took the leap, he really started reading the game well, get into the hoop, like, just putting the ball in the net. If Jabari Smith was like a 18, 20 point per game scorer, this would be like a completely different team.
That's a huge jump, though. And I mean, all the Instagram warriors are saying that we should trade Jabari Smith.
The Instagram warriors are definitely wrong. I don't think that's a huge jump or something that's out of the realm of possibility. Maybe not this year, but in a couple of years. I mean, he averaged 14 last year. He's a good three-point shooter. Like, yeah, I don't think Jabari Smith is ever going to be, like, your primary offensive hub, someone you're running a lot of actions through. But this guy can knock down shots. This guy can play in the post. He's pretty versatile. Like, him going for 30 in any given game is not out of the question. And him eventually averaging 18, I think, is very reasonable if he adds a few things to his offensive game.
Sure. Okay. So I guess sort of on that topic, we can sort of get into the development of some of these young stars. You know, who's making a difference now? Who can make a difference later on? Who are the players that Ime should sort of focus on as the cornerstones of the franchise, do we think?
What we're going to hear is some addition by subtraction. Get Jalen Green out of this city. This he is not the cornerstone of this team. Like, if you want players to keep, you're keeping Şengün and Jabari Smith. Jalen Green's been the same player since he came out, like, the G League.
That's not
And
true.
He's still G League level, bro. True. This dude is an inefficient scorer. He can't share the rock. He turns it over. He has flashy dunks, like, once every four games and, like, gets love. Like, I mean, I get it. He was supposed to be the guy, but, like, I'm going to be honest. This dude is not it. Like, you're never contending with Jalen Green as your best player. Let's get serious.
I think that's some D1 hating. I agree that Jalen Green is not that guy. Mm-hmm. I think it's very unfortunate that the Rockets landed second in that 2021 draft and got stuck with him when Cade Cunningham goes first overall. Then it's followed up with Evan Mobley and Scotty Barnes. If you're the Rockets and you have any of those three guys instead of Jalen Green, you're probably feeling awesome right now. However, Jalen Green still does have, like, the ceiling, the potential. We just only see it for a 10-game stretch every single year.
Yeah, that little insanity run last season, right?
He decides to go ballistic. He sees some of the Instagram baddies on the court, and he gets in his bag. What makes a player great is being able to do that consistently, and we don't see that from Jalen Green. You're right. When you watch him, like, handle the ball, you're in store from some just boneheaded turnovers. You're going to see some really poor shot selection sometimes. But then sometimes it's going to click and it's going to be absolutely electric. Like, I don't think you can give up on him now. Whatever value you get and recuperate in a trade for Jalen Green, unless you're going out to get, you know, a superstar, is not going to be what he's worth to keeping him on the team and just betting on the potential and betting on him reaching his ceiling.
It certainly seems like the players on the team, well, you know, there's no reason why you should dislike anybody on your team, but they really, like, pull for Jalen Green and see him as one of, like, the guys in, like, on the roster. You know, like, obviously, we mentioned some of the veterans before, but Jalen Green, it seems like he's sort of one of the figureheads, whether that's because it's, like, forced by the media or, like, the fans because we want to see that guy succeed. I don't know, but he seems like one of those guys that, I don't know, that the rest of the team likes. That's what I could sort of see from the Monday game against the Wizards. I know it is the Wizards, but...
I mean, if you're looking at players that like Jalen Green, it's probably Fred VanVleet because he also is inefficient, can't score, and turns the ball over. So you've got two guards that can't pass the rock. They're always making mistakes. These dudes are like literally like career like 42% from the field. Like if you look at the best guards in the league today, the Shai Gilgeous-Alexanders, the Donovan Mitchells, Jaylen Brown, these are efficient scorers that can score at all three levels. Maybe not Shai, but they can get to the rack. They can get to the free throw line. They can get it done. But Fred VanVleet and like Jalen Green, they don't move me. They're not efficient. I think the team would be much better off building around Şengün as like a little like baby Jokic is what people call him a lot of the time. And just like getting the shooters around him. I think that's what would utilize him best and his passing ability and just focusing on him as the cornerstone and maybe getting rid of some of the old like dead weight. VanVleet, probably Dylan Brooks as well after maybe this year or the next.
Wait, so who are the Utah Jazz guards again?
Keontae George, familiarize yourself.
All right.
He's better than all the guards on the Rockets.
He's all right. Okay, let's not
okay. All right, buddy. Okay, buddy. All right.
Well, I think Andrew brings up a good point, and let's transition then to, like, playing GM a little bit. If you want to see this Rockets team build towards a championship eventually and not just, you know, hover around the 8 or 7 seed while we wait for something to happen, I do think Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks need to be off your roster, if not at the trade line.
Both
deadline
of them,
this year.
Really?
Okay, Dylan Brooks is a cancer to the team.
Hey, put some respect on the guy's name. He's a community figure. I don't know if you've seen the Rockets Instagram. He talks to the kids.
Yeah.
He gets involved.
How did he help out Ja in Memphis's community?
Hey, you know what? Hey, what happened?
Yeah, I don't hear a rebuttal for that.
What happens in Memphis stays in Memphis.
Even going to talk about Dylan Brooks' character. I don't know him as a guy. I'm sure he's a cool dude. But my biggest issue with Dylan Brooks is he eats minutes. And when you're paying him $20 million a year, you have to pay him 30 to 35 minutes a game. There's just not enough to go around for Reed Sheppard and Cam Whitmore. When you draft Reed Sheppard third overall, he needs to be playing 20 minutes a game plus. Young guards have to be able to have some kind of leash, be able to make some kind of mistakes. That's like crucial to their development. With Dylan Brooks on the roster, that's so difficult to do. With Fred VanVleet on the roster, I'd argue that's so difficult to do because Reed is never going to have, you know, the reins to the offense, freedom to roam around when he's on the court with VanVleet.
So then you leave Steven Adams as what, like the one like veteran guy? Because you can't just have have a team of a bunch of youngsters, right?
Okay, you don't
have to. Especially if you want to make that put, like, let's say they do make the play-in and they catch this like hot streak. What do you do when you get there? You have a bunch of young players who've never played in the playoffs before. And then what, Steven Adams is your guy? Like, great guy, you know?
You want to lose that playoff game, I promise you.
Yeah, the Rockets are not like in a position as a franchise where they're like, I mean, they're not contending. They're probably not winning a playoff series. Like,
okay, but they've
core.
Been drafting like high-level prospects for years now.
Because they've been bad, but they need to focus on development. Like, if you're drafting Reed Sheppard at 3, which by the way was probably a reach, like you need
That's
to be giving him the minutes to like play.
Fox is on some hating energy right
now. No, because you're spending a super high draft pick on someone and then sticking him behind Fred VanVleet, who you're paying like $40 million a year for what?
Well, I see it as a financial like play, but I just like the development of the team doesn't just mean like accumulate, you know, get all these players and then, you know, just put like. The development of the players also depends on the guys you have around them, like, off the court, okay?
Well, we do have Steven Adams, Jeff Green. Like, there are some good veterans in Houston. It's not like you take Dylan Brooks and Fred VanVleet off this team and there's no one over the age of 28, you know? And that veteran presence, I think, is a little bit overstated as far as what you need. Like, Şengün has been on this team for, what, 5 years now? This is year 5 for him. You have guys who have been around. Ime Udoka, obviously, his circumstances in Boston weren't like great, but I do think he's someone who can build a good culture and is a really good head coach and like top 10 head coach in the league. I don't think we need to like overstate the importance of having some veterans for these guys' development. I think the biggest thing for their development is getting minutes, not just watching Fred VanVleet go out there for 36 minutes and lead you to the 8 seed. The worst place you can be in the NBA is in the middle ground, and that's kind of where the Rockets are right now. And I think we either need to get rid of VanVleet and Dylan Brooks and take a step back so you can get a high pick in this year's draft class, which is one of the best in the last decade, or, you know, consolidate assets and go after a superstar, the next one that comes available.
By the way, I heard a wee there from Garrett. Just wanted to point that out. Final thing I'll leave you guys with. So who says no, right? You send maybe Jalen Green, a veteran, make your pick from VanVleet, Dylan Brooks, maybe both, and a couple of high quality draft picks, send him over to Phoenix for Devin Booker.
You do that deal in a heartbeat, yeah. I think. Getting Devin Booker on this team would be awesome. I think if you have Reed Sheppard, Devin Booker, my goat, Tari Eason, Aubin Thompson, Şengün, there's just so many good pieces. Booker would absolutely light it up as the number one option in the offense. That would be awesome. I would be completely in favor of that.
Okay. Well, we'll see how the Rockets turn it on for the rest of the season. It's still early, but good start so far. Thank you, boys. All right, and going into the final part of our show here on Against the Grain on 96.1 K-True, we're going to get into our weekly prediction segment. So we've had a couple of guys pull ahead, and Garrett and Andrew at 5-1. To remind the viewers and the listeners, we make 3 picks each week based on some of the biggest games of the week. But this week, we are adding a 4th pick as our dog of the week. How this works basically is each of us goes through any of the leagues in American sports, or any sport, really, and we make we take the underdog outright in that matchup. So, for example, if I were to start us off here, my dog for this week is the Titans at +220 over the Minnesota Vikings. I just think the Vikings are reeling and Titans could sneak up on you. We can take it to Garrett with his dog pick of the week.
Yeah, I like that pick, Julian. I'm going to go with the New York Nets over the New York Knicks this weekend. I think they steal one. I think Dennis Schroeder goes off again. Over to Chloe.
Taking it to the realm of college basketball, I like University of New Mexico to defeat St. John's. They are currently have a 24% chance to win this game, but they are an underrated Group of 5 team. I like them to get the W here. David?
Going back to NFL, I'm taking the Seahawks over the Niners.
Whew.
They've got to lose at some point.
Sneaky good pick.
Max, the Seahawks fan, was shaking his head there.
They've lost a lot already.
Shout out Julian for taking my pick. I'm going to go with my fellow gambler, Calvin Ridley, and take the Titans over the Vikings. Ian.
Calvin Ridley has been my fantasy Achilles heel week in and week out. I'm going to take the Pitt Panthers in college football. They are home, and they are plus 300 against Clemson. I think that game stacks up pretty evenly, and I think the odds are just very disproportionate to two of those like top dogs in the ACC.
It was just Veterans Day, so give me our Navy at plus 210 over Tulane this weekend.
All right. So we've got our dog picks for the week. Just to catch all up, we do have Brandon taking ASU at plus 260 over Kansas State. But let's move on to our three matchups of the week. So we've got the Rice Owls in the women's basketball game against Houston. We've got the Eagles against the Commanders in tonight's game in Thursday Night Football. And as we've done every week, we will be predicting the Texans game. They play the Cowboys on Monday night. So let's start off with the Rice Owls against the Cougars. I'll start us off. I'll take the Owls. Go Owls. Let's get that dub. Garrett?
Yeah. Anybody know the line on this game by chance? Do we know? Do we know, chat? It doesn't matter. Give me the Owls by a million points.
Some may say I'm a homer, but when your home is right, you got to go with it. Give me the Owls.
I'm taking the Owls.
Rice by 50.
It pains me to do this. I'm going to take Houston. I have just been...
Ian.
Rice, I am begging them to prove me wrong. I will happily admit defeat on this one. I will be cheering against myself. I've just sat in the student section and watched Rice sports teams blunder in big hyped up games too many times over the course of my time here, but I am rooting so hard for the Owls, I assure you all at home and those of you glaring at me in the studio.
Give me Rice for the Jazzy takeover.
All right. Moving on to tonight's game between the Eagles and the Commanders. Commanders have been in a hot, they've been great this season, but the Eagles have been on a hot streak recently. Give me the Philadelphia Eagles.
Ooh, left hand up. Who are we? The Commanders. Give me the Commanders.
Eagles are home. I like how they've been playing recently. Give me the Eagles. David?
The Commanders are going to take command.
Jaden Daniels is better than Jalen Hurts by a mile. Give me the Commanders.
I believe that.
I mean, he's a little better, but I think the Eagles just overall are a lot better rounded, especially on defense and at the running back position, so give me the Eagles.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Eagles and premium running back Jalen Hurts.
I like Ian's analysis there, by the way. Also, we forgot to mention that Brandon is taking the Rice Owls and is also taking the Eagles. Seems like we've only got a couple of Commanders picks for that one. And finally, Texans and Cowboys. I will say, I was originally taking the Cowboys as the super underdog, but Nico Collins is coming back, and unfortunately, can't go against him. Give me the Texans on Monday night.
I hate to do it to my hometown team, but I don't hate to do it to Jerry Jones. Give me the Texans over the Cowboys.
I'm joining the Texans bandwagon. I think they get the win in this one. David?
Unlike Garrett, I got to stick with my home team. Give me the Cowboys.
I'll be surprised if the Cowboys score 10 points. Give me the Texans.
Take that bet now, Max.
If you've watched a Cowboys game in the last couple of weeks and you still pick the Cowboys, I honestly don't know what's going through your head. I got to take the Texans.
Yeah, me too. Give me Texans.
Let it be known, Texans, I would take the Cowboys if Nico is not playing. The Texans don't look good right now. But let's hope that they get the dub. And that is it for this week's show of Against the Grain. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back next week discussing both Rice and Houston sports. While you're at it, be sure to follow us on all socials at KTrueSports. And in case you didn't get to hear the whole episode, we've got great news for you. You can stream it on any platform of your choice, such as Spotify, Amazon Music, and iHeartRadio. And as well, please submit any questions or comments to the KTrueSports email at the email right here, ktruesports@gmail.com. If we get enough, we will do a mailbag. So thank you all so much for listening. That concludes this week's episode of Against the Grain.